everyone. Welcome to the September 2024 Logistics Pulse audio program, co-produced by Logistics Plus and Armada Corporate Intelligence. Thank you to our partners at WPSC Money Radio for recording and editing today's show. Today is Friday, September 20th, and our September Executive Supply Chain Bulletin was released and emailed to subscribers yesterday morning. I'm Scott Frederick, CMO for Logistics Plus, and with me is our regular guest and partner, Keith Prather, Managing Director for Armada Corporate Intelligence. Hey, Keith, why did the banker switch careers?
I don't know, Scott. Why did the banker switch careers?
Because she lost interest.
Now that's a topical one. You had to work hard for that.
So it seems the Fed's lowering of its key interest rate by 50 basis points is the biggest news this week. So what's your take on this move, and do you see any implications for the world of logistics?
I'm still just so impressed by the joke and just how topical it is, you know, fantastic. Yeah, it was a little bit of a surprise to me. Not the 50 basis point cut, right? So that was in the forecast. Everyone was expecting somewhere between a quarter and maybe 50 basis points on the high side. But it's what the Fed projected for the rest of the year and then for next year that actually surprised me and stunned me a little bit. What they have projected looks like they're going to be ahead of the curve. So for the rest of the year, it looks like we're going to get maybe at least another 50 basis point cut, maybe as high as 75 basis points. So we may, by the end of the year, have shaved a full point off of interest rates. Then for next year, they're expecting at least another point. So the Fed's long-term objective is to get down to about 2.9%. That looks like that'll be the lowest the Fed funds rate will ever get. And it looks like they're going to be largely on the way there by the end of next year. That puts it about, I'm going to say, 6 to almost 9 months ahead of where we thought they were going to be. And has a lot of implications overall for the supply chain. And, you know, initially in the near term between now and the end of the year, we're not going to see much impact. We'll see a little bit as consumers go out and they use this opportunity to refinance mortgages. And every time they refinance a mortgage, it instantly just puts money in their pocket. And on a monthly basis, then it frees up some cash. So we'll see some spending and some pockets of retail that maybe we didn't see prior to this. But after that, what we'll start to see early in 2025 is maybe a resurgence of construction activity. Residential will be a little bit slower than what we see in the non-residential side of the equation. But for supply chain and logistics, that's important because that'll help dictate kind of what flows through the supply chain. It might tighten truck driver capacity up just a little bit. We do compete with construction for jobs, and so for drivers, CDL drivers. And so we may see a little bit of competition there, maybe see a little bit of tightening of the driver force. But other than that, again, it was a surprise. It was a positive surprise. The reasons why they did that, I think, are a little bit concerning because they are worried about worsening labor conditions and that the labor conditions may be getting a little bit tougher than what we can see in the data. So that was a little bit concerning overall, and I think that might be the backdrop that seeps into Wall Street and into analyst thoughts and analyst expectations over the next few days.
Yep. A little relief on warehousing carrying costs as well going into next year if interest rates are lower. So that'll be a good relief for supply chain as well.
Yeah, that's right.
As usual, we have a lot to unpack here today. On a broad basis, it seems like both manufacturers and retailers have been ahead of the curve as far as their year-end ordering patterns, ordering a little bit higher in the cycle, it seems like. Some of this can be attributed to the planning ahead for potential labor disruptions at the East Coast ports when those agreements expire at the end of September. We'll get into that a bit in a moment, but the bottom line is that much of the freight and shipping industry is a bit soft again, as we're seeing in some of the numbers. And we're seeing that also in our Logistics Pulse Global Logistics Index, where demand for global logistics services has dipped 1.6 points from its previous reading. We're still in the expansion territory, but trending down. Any thoughts on the general state of logistics right now, Keith?
Yeah, so our general logistics index looks at the fundamental demand environment. And it's almost like a leading index in the sense that it helps us understand what the economic fundamental drivers of demand are going to look like over the next 6 months. And so it's saying that basically the demand environment at a fundamental perspective, like when we look at retail, we think about manufacturing, we think about all those things that create supply chain and logistics activity, they're softening a little bit, right? They were downshifting as we kind of went into the to the middle part of the third quarter. What we're seeing in other indexes, or what we're seeing in actual shipping activity, like you talked about, is companies trying to get ahead of the port situation. And so we do see increases in activity and actual shipping movement right now, but it's not really based on fundamental demand dynamics, right? It's trying to head off a black swan event. And right. So that's why we're getting a little bit of a discrepancy between, you know, some of the data that we typically would look at and some of what we're seeing in the logistics index. Yeah, it would be very rare. It's a very rare moment, but, you know, it's something that obviously we're dealing with on a global basis. Generally, manufacturing is a little bit soft right now. There's about 17 countries with manufacturing sectors in contraction. So we do get that global, or we see the global slowdown or deceleration, if you want to call it that. So that's the backdrop. You know, again, what we do with supply chain logistics and planning to get around a potential port strike is, you know, we inbound things early, and that's kind of what we've done.
One of the brighter spots in transportation right now seems to be intermodal, and we don't really talk much about rail and intermodal on this program, but by all accounts, it seems that intermodal activity from the ports is at all-time highs. The 281,000 containers carried by U.S. railroads in their intermodal operations during the second week of September broke a record that was set 3 weeks earlier, and this is according to the Association of American Railroads. Any thoughts on what's driving the surge in intermodal activity?
Yeah, and I think you nailed it before this in the prior question, because I think it really has to do with the ports and the port situation. We overall are going to be inbounding a lot more than we did last year. And so I think a lot of retailers are, you know, they had depleted their inventories. We know on a historical basis, they were sitting a lot lighter than they had been in like an average year in the decade prior to the pandemic, right? So if we do those comparisons, we knew that they were sitting light. It looks like consumer spending has been a little bit better than expected. At least it's remained stable, which is what obviously retailers are going to look for. So they're kind of expecting a little bit, you know, kind of came to them a little bit late, but they're kind of expecting to have a pretty good peak retail season. That plus the port situation forced them to inbound a little bit early. So we do know that front loaded into Q3 and probably a little bit even in Q2, we did have some inventory building activity pulled forward, or pulled back, I should say, into those months. And we can see it in actual economic GDP data, because we could see that surge in Q2 in business inventories that grew unexpectedly. And then we're getting a little bit of that in Q3, but not as much as we would have, like, say, last year, in a what would have felt more like a more normalized peak. But anyway, I think that's part of the reason. I think that's primarily why this is happening, is just shippers trying to get ahead of a potential disruption starting on October 1st. And, you know, that's sort of the backdrop here.
Well, we kind of been dancing around it, but, let's talk about the port situation, since that's where all eyes are focused right now, and rightfully so. It seems the International Longshoremen's Union, or the ILA, is prepared to begin striking on October 1st if they don't reach an agreement with the U.S. Maritime Alliance, which represents ports along the Gulf Coast all the way up through the entire East Coast of the United States. We're already hearing that some of the steamship lines are starting to turn down export bookings out of those ports, and they're also implementing surcharges for containers going into those ports. The ports themselves are warning shippers that containers not loaded to the ships before the strikes occur will not be monitored or maintained if the ports have to shut down. So that's creating some additional risk for shippers as well. Compounding things, the diversion of containers to the U.S. West Coast ports is creating some new bottlenecks as dwell times begin to swell out there, particularly in the ports of L.A. and Long Beach. And we're also seeing that manifest itself in the Logistics Pulse Port Congestion Index, which is in the bulletin this month. Keith, you know, what are supply chain managers to make of this mess?
Yeah, you know, I think this is one of them. I mean, we've been watching this situation now for months and months and months, and I think supply chain managers were way out in front of it. So a lot of them, I don't think very many will be caught surprised by this, and I think a lot of them have already made their contingency plans. Now, the backing up of the LA Basin, you know, right now we're not seeing like the chronic bottlenecks that we saw maybe in 2021 and 2022. And we've also had some changes, I think, logistically that allow us to provide a couple of additional alternatives because we can now look at Lázaro Cárdenas down in Mexico. We can also look at Vancouver, and you can inbound freight now with some of those continuous networks, like from CPKC, and being able to connect, you know, the middle part of the United States with those two ports. And so that provides a lot of different options, a lot of new options, I think, for supply chain managers that maybe we didn't have several years ago. At least they've improved. It's a little smoother. It's a little easier to make that shift temporarily. So I think supply chain managers will get through it. And as we said earlier, you know, they've inbounded freight early to kind of get ready and prepare. I think most folks are thinking that if there is a disruption, it won't be long lasting. I think from a national security perspective, I think there's enough concern about what it would mean to shut down every port from Maine to Corpus Christi, Texas, and what the implications would be on a national security basis. So at some point in time, I think the federal government will jump in and help mediate or help moderate discussions to try and get to a conclusion. So whether we're looking at a couple of days of a disruption or a couple of weeks, I think a lot of supply chain managers have built that security into their supply chains. You know, if it lasts longer than that, then we start getting into a more of a black swan event and more of a crisis event, and then we'll start to see a lot of scrambling. And again, I think you'll see those alternative ports that I mentioned earlier, you know, especially down in Mexico and then some up in Vancouver, if the West Coast gets really backed up, as you know, potential alternatives and ways to kind of work around it. But yeah, but there's no getting around the fact that this would be a big deal if we did see a strike.
Yeah, I mean, the consensus of other folks I've talked to is that there probably will be a strike. It will be short-lived, you know, maybe a week or so. So really comes down to, you know, supply chains and whether, you know, if you believe that to be true, if you can live without that stock or that product or inventory for a week delay or, you know, a couple week delay, or if you need to perhaps look at air freight or some of those alternative ports that you talked about. So those are certainly the decisions that supply chain managers are thinking about right now. Let's talk freight prices for a few minutes because we have our Fed's updated PPI numbers, and we saw a surprise jump in truckload pricing in August. Saw a little bit of relief on the LTL rate side, but those are still on the uptick as well. Air freight rates continue to trend upwards, and ocean container rates remain high on key Asian trade lanes. In this month's bulletin, we talk a little bit about the air cargo situation. So, any thoughts on those pricing trends?
Yeah, and I think you nailed a lot of them when we talked about them a little bit earlier on. You know, air cargo right now is being used as that tuck-in alternative. So if you do need a few parts for an assembly line, for instance, I think a lot of supply chain managers have decided to go ahead and use air cargo as the ability to do these little tuck-in orders to keep operations moving. You know, we see global air freight rates, you know, right now, you know, up almost 14% year over year. And there's really not a lot of cold chain activity like we had maybe during the pandemic when we were moving vaccines around the world. So it's not being driven heavily by these emergency, you know, health-related types of events. It's really more about keeping inventories lean and using air cargo to fill in these little stock gaps. And so I think we'll see that continue through the end of the year. I think that's a trend that we'll see play out. For LTL, it's kind of interesting because, you know, the TL demand that's being created is largely what we talked about earlier. It's the surge in intermodal activity and TL being able to move a lot of that product. And so TL is kind of benefiting from that wave that we are bringing in full container loads and we're having to process those. LTL then suffers a little bit because even though we had the Yellow bankruptcy a year ago and we have tighter capacity in general, a lot of companies are just not at that point where they're moving those smaller shipments, trying to, you know, either reshuffle inventory prior to the peak or, you know, just keep normal little manufacturing operations going. Manufacturing itself in the U.S. is in contraction right now. So one of the key drivers of that domestic LTL business is really struggling at the moment. So I think that's a little bit of the backdrop that we see in trucking. I think moving forward, then I think the global supply chain has really reset itself from an inventory perspective. And I think kind of moving into early 2025, we should see things normalize. And so freight volumes, ratios, you know, mode use, all that really should fall back into a normal routine. When I say normal, you know, it's going to feel more like the 2017, 18, and 19 period. And, you know, I think that's kind of where we go from there.
Yeah. We monitor a lot of different metrics and indices, and certainly we follow those Fed's PPIs pretty closely. We know that oftentimes economic indicators are seemingly contradictory with one another. The metric I'm still having a little bit of a hard time with is understanding the Fed's PPI for maritime freight pricing, which we include in the bulletin. The Fed's August reading was down 12% in July and 15% over last year, but we all know that container rates are very elevated right now, at least on the import side, according to the Drewry Index, which we also follow in a report in the bulletin. Any thoughts on how we kind of reconcile these different metrics?
Yeah, so the PPI is a survey that will ask supply chain managers or anyone using maritime freight, you know, what do your total costs look like? And so what they're getting is basically a reflection on total costs, which would include contract and spot rates and fuel. Whereas the Drewry Index is just using spot rates without fuel. And I think that's the discrepancy between the two. When you look at contract rates did bump up in, I think, March, April, and May of this year. But, you know, on a year-over-year basis, there was a lot of folks who were kind of getting advantages and were able to get contract rates down. Fuel prices, you know, bunker rates right now are pretty low. And so it's, I think they're getting that benefit when you look at the PPI. And, you know, it's a survey instrument and, you know, it depends on who they're surveying. They typically will get several hundred surveys a month, but there could be some issues with stability of that particular survey kind of weighing in, but that's the real difference. Drury is looking at the spot market and looking at those spot rates. And so if there's any hyperventilation across the global maritime industry, you know, they're going to pick up on that hyperventilation. And right now you've got a lot of that with the Red Sea situation and what's happening in the Middle East and just this global juggling of maritime capacity and trying to get it streamlined.
Yeah, I think the PPI too, it's kind of a composite index. So it's looking at exports and, you know, a lot of lanes that are not elevated right now, where the Drewry Index typically doesn't, you know, report in a composite basis. It's more on a trade lane basis. And that's where we see those huge spikes, particularly on those Asian trade lanes coming into Europe and into the US.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. As we kind of wind down today's discussion, let's look into your crystal ball there, Keith. And what do you think about next year? I mean, as we think about 2025, what should supply chain managers expect, do you think?
Yeah, you know, barring anything major, and by that I mean a geopolitical event, something that happens in the energy sector, something that we can't control, barring any major event, I think 2025 is going to feel more normal than any year we've had in probably the last 5 years. It's probably 2019 was the last time that we had a more normal year. So I think next year is going to be very interesting for us, because I think a lot of us will have to get our old playbooks out and kind of dust them off a little bit to be able to really understand what the year will look like. I think it'll be a more normalized peak. There's not going to be any major labor contracts looming. You know, we won't have a Canadian rail threat or strike threat. We're not going to have a West Coast port negotiation. We won't have an East Coast port negotiation. It looks like things will streamline a little bit. The only factor we'll have to get over is potentially an economic slowdown. And I say only, I don't mean to diminish it, but supply chain managers know how to kind of handle that situation more so than maybe a surge where we create bottlenecks and we have problems with throughput and we have capacity challenges. Those are big problems to deal with. Next year, if it's a more normalized year, they have time to plan, they have time to think, they have time to negotiate. I think carriers will have the same advantages. So I think we see a more balanced environment, more balanced marketplace. And so I think it could be interesting. It won't be a boring year by any stretch of the imagination, but it may feel that way compared to the last 3 or 4 years we've had, you know. So I think freight rates will move up at a moderate level, but nothing dramatic. And but I think there should be some nice equilibrium kind of created in the marketplace overall.
Well, boring sounds good to me. Well, hey, I asked you last month. You didn't give me an answer. I'll ask you again this month. Any election predictions?
There will be an election. I think that's probably the best prediction I can give you right now.
All right.
I really don't know. And again, yeah. it's going to come down to the composition of Congress as to what really makes a difference here. And right now, when you look at the polls and you look at some of what's going on, it looks like it's still going to remain fairly balanced, which is probably the best case scenario for all involved. That's what the stock market would love to see. That's what businesses would like to see. It's a balanced Congress means that it's going to take quite a bit to get major, you know, policy change in place, and market likes certainty. So we'll watch for that.
Very good, Keith. As always, appreciate your insights and working with us on the bulletin and this podcast. As a reminder, you can visit logisticsplus.com/logisticspulse to view our September issue or subscribe to future issues. Logistics Pulse is a complimentary value-added intelligence briefing for Logistics Plus customers, partners, and prospects. Until next month, and with our help, hopefully you can be sure to keep your finger on the pulse of logistics.